What's up, everybody? Welcome to the first ever episode 156 of the Kind of Funny Games cast. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by one of the coolest dudes in video games, Greg Miller.
Ooh, ha!
And joining us for the first time, the very lovable Nick Suttner.
I'm also down with the sickness.
You are? Yes, he is. That's what I like to hear.
So, Nick Suttner, you actually wrote the book on Shadow of the Colossus.
I did.
In your Twitter bio, it says you literally wrote the book.
I'm glad I could literally write the book on something.
Yeah, and that's fantastic. So what I love about this, the reason that we have you on this episode is I beat the Shadow of the Colossus remake. We're going to be doing thank you.
What a man. Thank you. No trophies to prove it.
Never know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I wanted to have you on the show because, you know, you are quite aware of this game and its intricacies.
Well, we're mutually interested because I actually haven't played the remake yet, so I'm really curious
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
But then I also beat Celeste, and then in the credits, I see your name pop up, and I saw it great. I'm like, this is the perfect episode to have you on. I love this.
It's timing worked out pretty well.
So, ladies and gentlemen, this episode is going to be about reviewing all of the amazing games that have come out within like a week time frame.
Hell yeah. Monster Hunter.
January 2018 is already starting to look like 2017 in terms of, is this one of the best years in video game history? I just can't believe it. It's a great time for everybody. This is the Kind of Funny Games cast. Each and every week we get together right here on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and talk about video games and all the things that we love about them. You can get the show early by going to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like our boy Tom Bach did, our Patreon producer. He's a beautiful person. You can get the show early. You can watch it live for just $1. You can get the show VOD with the whole pre-show and post-show for $10.
In the pre-show, we make fun of Tim a lot.
We do. And it's a good time. I even make fun of
myself. Do you think he looks goofy with the hat, not with the, you know,
It's a little hot for the hat.
It's creating a shadow.
You guys.
Oh,
you gotta
wow.
Deal with the fuzz.
Now, Nick. This is a big deal because Tim is king of fashion over function.
Fashion over function.
So that'll let you know how hot it really is here in San Francisco today that he's going to let himself be on camera with that hair. Go.
Well, because if he kept the hat on, it was going to like wilt into how he wants it.
He wants to become
what he hates.
Yeah, exactly. The real thing, will he ever lose this bomber jacket?
Oh, it's coming off at some point.
Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, if you are an audio listener, pull the car over and get your phone out and start watching this on YouTube.
Things are about to get really crazy. I want to jump right into it, Greg.
All right.
Monster Hunter World.
Come on and let the hunt be the hunted.
That's what they say. Yeah, that's what they've been saying. You and Kevin have been playing this. Have you played it at all, Nick?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Have you ever played Monster Hunter?
No, so I remember when I have a very strong memory of when Monster Hunter was first announced and seeing it in some magazine at the time. And I was like, oh my God, that sounds like the greatest concept ever.
Yeah.
And then it was revealed that it didn't have any voice chat. And I was playing, I forget the exact timing, but I believe I was playing like SOCOM at the time.
Sure.
Super into it. And I was like, if you can't talk to your friends, what's the
point?
This is a fad. I just sort of like wiped it out of my brain, like, I'm not going to play that game. And then I waited and now I'm interested in some ways. I still have never touched one, though. So I'm curious.
Wow,
and
really?
Like everyone I know is playing it.
Because, we haven't run, your history, of course, EGM, 1UP, you went to PlayStation, now you're out here gun for hire doing all this awesome stuff.
True.
I'm weird that I think on paper, I never, ever, ever would have given any Monster Hunter a chance.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got hired at IGN, it was Jeremy Dunham's, you know, we're going to review everything and we don't care what anybody likes. So I reviewed two PSP versions of Monster Hunter.
Yeah.
And so like it's an obtuse game now, let alone back then.
Yeah. And for a while it was primarily a portable series, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so like we would have, when I was reviewing it, Capcom would do desk side visits where they would come and just play with you for hours and like explain intricacies and stuff.
Desk side visits.
Yeah. And like, so I fell in love with it there, at least learned to appreciate it, even though I was like using the PSP claw finger.
Oh my God.
Exactly. It was a big thing back in the day that then Peace Walker, of course, perfected.
Perfected the claw.
But once I moved away from reviewing it and it came to Wii when it came with that controller and it came to 3DS or maybe just DS. I always confuse those. It was very much something I was like, oh, cool. I've had my time in those. I'm not very interested into it. And so even when they announced it for PS4, it was a awesome. I'm glad that series is there. I know how important it is. I know how much people love it. Won't be for me. And then the closer we got to release, the more people talked about, like, because I would talk about the shows. I just wasn't that, feeling it. And people were like, no, they fixed this and they did that and blah, blah, blah. And it was, as Kevin and I all at the end of, or throughout 2017, were warming up to actually playing multiplayer games together and going home.
Mm-hmm.
This was the one of like, I would say December, I was like, fuck, I can't wait for Monster Hunter World now. And so then I started putting in Kevin's ear that he got into it. Kevin, were you excited for Monster Hunter World?
All right, don't freak out, but yep, yeah, I was pretty excited.
Oh, Jesus. You're such a monster.
Don't freak out.
You weren't excited. At first, you were telling me you wouldn't play it at all.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I wasn't listening to the question. But yeah, no. At first, I wasn't excited. And when it came out, I played maybe like 3 hours on my own.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, this game keeps trying to talk to you.
Yeah, you hate it when games talk to you.
Yeah, and it's just like, I don't care. I just want to play.
I heard that.
And now I'm like maybe 9 hours in.
Yeah.
And I'm really enjoying it.
Kevin and I are addicted
really
to this.
Really like okay. it.
So when you say 9 hours in, is that like, are you just playing with friends the whole time? And is it like, is it like Destiny where you're sort of doing the same race?
We're not doing the same stuff. We could if we wanted to, okay. right? So it's broken up into like, basically, here's your story missions, here's your optional missions, here's your expeditions that you can go out on and, you know, do the different stuff. Because there's like tons of people in your like village square or whatever giving you like, I research mushrooms for me and shit like that.
And is it all multiplayer driven? Like even in story mode, that's a thing you're intended to do co-op?
Story mode, not so much.
Yeah.
Story mode is a pain in the ass to play story missions with each other.
It doesn't even slow us down.
It doesn't slow us down. Well, it slows us down actually, but it's just annoying because what it is Kevin will, it works like it did on PSP, right? Where of like, all right, cool. You go to the quest board or to your keeper and you're like, all right, now I'm gonna pick this quest to do. Mm-hmm. You post it. And the way they run it is interesting where it's you and I think it's 16 players can be inside of your like hub world. And you can all go do your own fucking thing and not worry about it. But when you're getting ready to make a quest or whatever, you can go post it and choose if it's private or public. And then people can come join you that way.
And that's 4-player, right?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Okay. The problem is, though, like Kevin and I were trying to work it out. Like, I had been playing before him. Then he played a little bit after me. And we're trying to finally got it to, okay, we have the same story mission. Let's go. And he'd post it and I'd go to join. And it would be like, you haven't progressed enough in the story to do this. And I'm like, the same mission. And what it is that you have to start the things solo. In like, you know, it's usually every mission is like, oh, go and find this monster. So you go in there and then when they reveal a new monster, you get the cutscene of the monster getting revealed. You both have to individually play to that part. Then one of you has to quit out and then join the other person's quest that way, just for the story.
Yeah, yeah.
If you do the optional stuff, if you do exhibition, I screwed up a time.
Expedition. Expedition, that's right.
You go out there and you do it that way. You can jump and go from the start and be fine. Gotcha. And so, like, even going back on certain things, it's fine. But, like, at the moment, trying to play it, both players have to have seen the cutscene for you to be able to join on it. So that's stupid for story, but it's a little gripe in a game that's awesome. And it is, like, Kevin and I feel like I had way more problems. This sounds stupid, I know, but way more problems getting PUBG to work with both of us when we first started, didn't we? Or no, GTA.
GTA
Online. Yeah.
PUBG was
way more fucking complicated in terms of how are we going to play the same match together. Or like, and it was just a pain in the ass because there was no simple answer when we were looking for, all right, we're in the same game world. I set this up, but random people are joining. How do I private? And blah, blah, blah.
You know, even now, I'm still not sure how to get it to work. I have a feeling like we GTA? Still have to use someone that is a higher.
Well, remember
level
it was Peanut
it
telling
us
that we were since we were so low level we didn't have it. Who the hell knows? Yeah. GTA Online dead to us. Monster Hunter World live to us.
So what makes it awesome?
It's the grind of video games. It's the hook of video games.
Because I will say that's actually one reason why I'm not as interested as I was would be is I'm not really into like loot of any sort and I don't really play games for that sort of a lead part of the gameplay loop.
Yeah.
And I don't play a lot of stuff. I mean, I used to play a lot of, Socom, like I mentioned, and Halo and some Rocket League, but I'd mostly have fallen off like online, multiplayer gaming. So I'm curious, is that like how much of the driver is that? Or like is the actual combat and hunting and everything just inherently fun as well and really well done? Like,
it's as well done as it ever is, where it's like I wish it was more one-to-one button control action, if that makes sense, instead of getting into combos where I'll be like, lock, the monster moves, and I keep going. I'm like, that sucks. But like, that's a small part of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas like, the joy of it is Kevin and I bullshitting around, running, finding the guy, then I'm coordinating traps I'm putting down. He's talking about where he's at. His cat is helping me out doing all this different stuff.
It's super satisfying to like actually do damage and see the like giant monster get hurt. Tim, can you move your hands when I move mine?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
See,
if you're an audio listener, Kevin has green screened his head in over
and
Tim's body perfectly.
It's so good.
It is really good.
Yeah, it is really good.
All right. Yeah, I mean, but it is very, very gratifying. There's something about like this giant monster that like is T-Rex size coming at you, and you're just standing there with a little fucking hammer, Man. It's not little.
Do I have the game for you?
I was about to say, which game are we talking about?
Yeah. But it's, you know, learning to dodge roll. It's learning to work together. It's learning, like, we're still at the point, where obviously, where we're taking on monsters the first time. So when you start wearing them down and they're kicking our ass, but suddenly, you know, they start coughing up poison or whatever. Like, oh, fuck, we're actually doing damage. Mm-hmm. Or they get angry and all of a sudden are breathing fire. Like, last night we were playing and it was like, we're working on this guy, and he's way too big, and we're working, and then finally, like, a dragon four times bigger or whatever showed up. We're like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Like, we're terrified of him. Fish. He's fighting him. We're, like, in pandemonium mode trying to figure it all out.
I was watching someone play a bit recently, and I do like how the sort of, like, damaged state of the monster is expressed through their animation.
Yeah.
And that's
there's no health bar for them, right? You just are trying to, you're never quite sure how close you are, but they'll give you signs that, yeah, this is it. And every one of them has a different strategy. Every one of them, I think, you know, we're getting to the point where we're fighting monsters where I've just been going with my dual blades, right? And Kevin's mainly been using a hammer. But, like, last night he started working with the gun lance and all this stuff where it's like, all right, we have to start expanding out. And, like, because it's, you know, the gear loop to it isn't like Destiny, where in Destiny it was, ooh, a Bright Ingram. I can't wait to get that and bump up my stat. And it's very much like you see all the sets and you of armor as you, like, as you beat new creatures, you see then that set unlock and you see what you can do for it. And so I have a costume I like a lot right now. I see, like, Grimecraft. I think he stopped making music and just plays this game because he's everything I look, he's like fucking insane and has all this awesome gear.
Yeah, he looked like a badass Shovel Knight.
Right? And that's the thing where it's like, I totally aspire to be that and to put that much into that game. But even right now, I don't feel like I look dumb. And I also feel like the rewards I'm getting are building up and making what I have better. Mm-hmm. But it is that thing of, like, right now, you know, we Kevin and I are out there fighting what I know from experience are smaller monsters and we're doing, like, you know, 5 points, five hit points damage here. And it's like, well, I can't wait to where this is actually cranked up and we're really, we come back to these guys and just lay them out because we're trying to, you know, we're so much better and here.
My other new Monster Hunter question is, what's up with these cats?
Yeah, so that's the thing is, I have two questions. One is, why is my timeline totally filled with the cats?
Well, you loved it, you said. So I do why love you, it. Look, don't look a gift horse in the mouth.
The second question just, what's up with these cats?
The second question is just like, and why are they like sushi chefs?
Because that's what the cats have always been, or in the Palicos, have always been in Monster Hunter. They've always just been your little companion.
Wait, so are they supposed to, like, not be cats? They're like Palicos? Correct. Is that their species?
Yeah, okay, exactly. Sure, because they can talk to you, right? They what is it, a Meowster? Instead of Master, they call you a Meowster?
Okay, that's what has sold me on the game more so than anything else.
Right. Except, so. But it's very much like they're a critical part of solo play, where they have a weapon of their own. They're not doing a lot of damage, but what they'll do is draw aggro. So, like, rather if you, because you need to run away and drink a potion to heal,
are you
or
like
take
bossing
an enemy
them around, or like
they no, they're on their own. Okay. There might be, you know, elite strategies where people do that. I definitely haven't gotten into worrying about that yet. But they'll draw aggro. You get to run away. You get to set up a trap or do whatever.
Do you like them? Like, are they cool or are they like Slippy from Star Fox?
Kevin says they are fucking awesome.
But do you like Slippy?
No, Slippy sucks. But, like, it's the kind of thing where, like, you're playing and you're like, fuck, my health is down.
Yeah.
And then they come out of nowhere with this, like, bug that gives you life, like, that they just brought to you.
It's true. That happens.
And it's like, fuck, thank God.
They're helpful. And I think that's more than anything. I would say I have a positive disposition to them, but I'm not like in love with my cat.
Last sub question is, the sushi, is this monster sushi of the monsters you kill, or is the sushi that they're just feeding you from fish from the river to help buoy your monster efforts?
That's a great question.
Everything's a monster in this world.
I think since we're so low right now, and I haven't even fucked around that much in the canteen, you know, a cantina, to really get a feel for it. I would assume that, you know, the menu upgrades and changes as you go or whatever. But yeah, it's a weird game of. Yeah. You got, well, it's a weird game, period. You can put an end of the sentence there. But I mean, of like, yeah, you know, you're supposed to eat before you go out to have more stamina. You cook meat on the spot to get it to have more stamina.
All right.
There's a million little there.
And probably, I imagine that Zelda also like got a lot of people thinking about that recently,
sure,
too.
Sure. Yeah, and that's the thing
meat
is,
to prep them.
It's very interesting in the way Monster Hunter on PSP, when I was told, you know, you're reviewing it, it was like, okay, this is a big deal in Japan. Okay, like, I know it moves PSPs and I know that. And the fact that over here it was such a niche. And when I was reviewing at the time, I really didn't know anybody else in the industry. And then, granted, you remember this, it was a much more insular industry where we did not talk to other publications. But I didn't know people who were like huge Monster Hunter fans. And it wasn't until when we came out, I remember Charles Onyet like revealed himself to be a huge fan. I was like, what? Where the hell? Why did we never talk about this back then? It doesn't matter. And then now, like, I think you mentioned it on maybe Kind of Funny Games Daily of like, this is Monster Hunter World is really the Persona 4 Golden of this franchise, where it's like everybody suddenly is like, oh, this is awesome. I've heard great things. Now it's on a platform I like. Everybody's playing it.
And also, there's like a mainstream awareness. Like I was a couple days ago, I was in this little tiny diner in Michigan in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. And that was like a sports bar, like everywhere is there. And they had like ESPN on mute. But then like there's a Monster Hunter commercial. And I was like, okay, this really is like, this is a huge thing.
I think it's... We're just in a much more interesting spot, I think, for online gaming, games as a service, whatever you want to call it. But where it's like before, it was like, oh, this is a cool PSP. Let's ad hoc play and do all this stuff. It was like, that's cool, but not many people were doing that. Mm-hmm. And we, as Americans, weren't that society where it was in Japan. Okay, you're on the train. There's another person.
Yeah, we don't like looking at each other in person.
Exactly, exactly. But I mean, even now where we are with online gaming, with games like Destiny or, you know, with games like any of the other games and services that have crossed over. We even remember how it was so weird. I remember being a console player and talking to people who played WoW and MMOs in general. And you're just like, wow, that didn't exist on consoles for so long. Mm-hmm. Whereas now the idea of going home and, you know, Kevin and I put, I guess it was probably a 50-minute time limit into the T-Rex the first time we saw him before when we were way under level. Right. And we kept getting our ass kicked. And it was like, well, we are getting nothing from this. We are wasting time. We are wasting resources. But fuck, is this fun?
Right.
Yeah, so is that what you were talking about earlier where I thought it was 9 hours? Or no, 9 hours is total what you put in. So you put an hour into a fight and you lost, you got nothing from it. Do you gain experience points? Is there any type of loot that you're getting even if you
catch
the monster? You kill the monster.
Kill the monster.
Got it.
Okay. Well, I imagine maybe like Dark Souls where you're just learning.
Exactly. A big part of it is learning their methods, your methods, what weapons you need or don't need or how that would work. Yeah, because you only have limited inventory space you can come into. You have a giant chest at home with all your stuff in it.
I should know this, but is this one coming to Switch?
No, it's not.
I asked because I was just interested about that part of like Nintendo's trying to cultivate the like, you know, we hang out and play with our Switches together. Yeah. Seems like it would be a good fit now, but I don't know.
Yeah. There's a bug flying around.
There is. I'm trying to get him out of the fuck away.
No, I think it's one of those. Kevin, how's it running on your normal PlayStation 4? I've seen kids in my timeline complaining about it. I'm playing on a Pro.
It's running fine. Okay. I honestly don't have any complaints.
Okay.
So
that'd be my thing. I don't know, you know, not to knock the Switch because I love it so much, but I don't know how it could handle all that and do that. But even if it just had ad hoc play, that'd be something else for it there.
How many monsters are there? And are there multiple of the same monsters that exist, or like when you kill the T-Rex, the T-Rex
No. There's it's an unlimited pile of monsters.
Okay.
Because what the game really is about, when you talk about grinding, right, is you play through all the story missions, sure, but then it unlocks the hunts for the monsters you've done, and you can go do those, turn those back in. You're killing, when you beat a monster, there's, you know, the celebratory music and cool camera sweep, and then it stops, and it's usually 60 seconds of run up to the monster and carve them up because you need their bones and their skin and all this other stuff to go back to make armor, to upgrade your weapons, to make these new things. So it is... I'm trying to think of...
I hope that's a really gruesome, like, trauma center style.
No, you wish.
It does look a little creepy when there's three people just kind of...
Yeah, just stabbing
the
thing.
What's the cat doing during... Is he just kind
of... Just chill? Eating.
Running around doing its still thing. Spelling, yeah, you know, just being a cat. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I'm really interested.
Wait, so how many monsters are there?
I don't know.
Unique. Well, okay.
I, that's the thing.
Is it like 10 or is it like 100?
In terms of how big this game is, we are that far into it. And I've... Yeah, I don't know how you feel anymore, but like once we left the like, hey, I'm doing like real games coverage. If a game interests me, I try to turn off about it for the most part. And so like I'm having such a great time of me and Kevin playing. And then like last night we ran into this like fucking flying squirrel snake creature that was made of electricity. And I'm like, this is fucking rad. Of like, I didn't.
It was so hard to beat.
It was hard to beat, but it was awesome.
Did you do it?
Yes. Oh yeah, hell yeah, yeah. I did it. Come on, man. Come on,
good.
Man.
Good job,
Kevin. And so I don't want like I don't know any of the like hardcore stats on it or that stuff. And again, like I'm not a hardcore Monster Hunter player. I have an experience from back in the day.
It's cool too. I imagine playing it for, well, I don't know. I guess you did play it on PSP, but I know some of the monsters are like back, right?
But I'm sure
a lot of them are new to you.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. 100%.
Yeah. Cool.
Do you see yourself playing this for more than 2 more weeks?
Hard to say.
Sounds like a job interview. Where do you see yourself in two weeks from this game?
I don't know. No. It really, my concern is just like, we are 10 hours in. And when we got it and it was like, there's the Horizon pack as part of this. And I was like, oh, holy shit, what's that? And I looked into it and you can get for your cat, like the fucking watcher face. And he looks like a watcher. I'm like, I want that now. And it's like, you can't get it till you're Hunter Rank 6. You get that quest. And I'm like, we'll cruise to that. Last night, we finally got to Hunter Rank 4. And I'm just like, oh, fuck. And it's like,
now you can't give up. Now you got to get
there. Well, no. I mean that I'm just, it's a game that I this is, I'm trying to think of the last game I don't even know if Destiny was like this, because I guess Destiny I got to binge. Right now, my life is not allowing me to binge this game, which is giving me such a strong pull of just like, fucking call in sick. Don't come, you know what I mean? Like, we need to just fucking...
He literally said that. He's like, next week, let's just call in sick.
We need to fucking figure this out and make content out of or something, because I need a weekend straight to play it, because I just want to play it, because it's annoying not knowing stuff. And it's like, Kevin and I were fighting the monsters, and this might have been in PSP, but I don't think it was, but maybe it was, and I just don't remember it. But, like, we were on an elevated plane, right? And, like, the monster was below us, and I made a move, and I jumped down onto the back of the monster, and he started, and I'm like, fuck, and it's like, triangle, 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 and, like, you're like, and I was like, this, I didn't know this was here, so it's like, right now, 10 hours in, I still haven't even gone, I'm on the subreddit, and I'm like, you know, glancing at it here and there, I still haven't gone into the let's watch a YouTube video about how you're supposed to do this, because I know we are fighting like Neanderthals. Like I was telling,
I'm trying to dip and dodge as much as possible.
We have a I have a friend too, from back in the day, who works at Capcom, who's a huge Monster Hunter fan, and we were she's been talking to me as it was leading up to it, and she's like, we should play sometime. You know, I'm just running around helping people, and I'm like, I'm too embarrassed by how bad Kevin and I are. Not that we're bad, but like we just
I'm bad.
No,
Kevin. You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And I'm like, I just want to get my feet under me. And I don't want to be Sherpa through this. I love the idea that the game is to a point that Kevin and I can just do this. But I just want to get a day where it's like, all right, cool. I've set up my private world. Here's the code and here's the password. Just come join us and do your own thing. Because again, it's not like they're forced on you. I'm going to have people running up to me. You don't even see each other when you're in the world, like the hub world. You just have to post quests and see what's going on.
So with Kevin, with you guys, how you're playing, you said you both just hit level 4 or whatever.
Yeah.
If you were to go on vacation or whatever, and Kevin keeps playing and gets up to level 7, would that like totally not be fun to play together anymore? Or,
I mean, I don't know. When
the monsters scale to to whoever's in there. So when you're playing solo, they're perfect for you. When you're playing with other people, it'll scale the difficulty. It'll
matchmake in a way. Yeah. Okay, that's cool.
So and at that point, I wouldn't care, because like, again, Kevin and I, we're Legion of Doom over here. You know what I mean? We're bringing monsters to their knees. So if that was the case, where that would actually help us out in a lot of ways, because Kevin would see all the cutscenes, and I'd be like, I'm fighting this guy. And like, we're in PS and party chat. Like last night, it was me, Kevin, and Jen in party chat. And she was way behind us, still trying to unlock the stuff to where she could play with us. So we were just chatting up about whatever, and he was off on a mission, I was off on a mission. And then for me to get to, all right, here's the monster, come help me, he'd be able to jump in, go do it. And I think that's where you're seeing what you'll see when we start streaming it, or when I do start putting out my code on Twitter, of just like, come on in and post your quest, and if I want to, I'll jump in there because I need to go get this.
Can you draw people in live to like an encounter?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, if the encounter's going and you're open, or you've invited them, yeah, you can drop in.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. You can have it open, and there's an ID that you can just punch in.
Yeah. He's talking about, though, if they joined our world and we were already off on a hunt.
Yeah.
Got it.
But yeah, our quest would still be there open as long as we didn't have all four people.
Cool. How long do you think you're going to play, Kev?
I don't know, man. I could see this going, like, I'm enjoying it on a level I did not expect.
Mm.
And so I'm very curious how much, like, time we'll put in this. Because, I mean, I still definitely want to play PUBG, and I want to try to get some, like, PUBG going this weekend. But I have a feeling it's going to be all Monster Hunter.
My thought process on it would be this, is that I love it. I'm super committed. I'm interested to see where it goes. And just like the Monster Hunters before it, right, and what you're seeing when I look at Grimecraft's story or anybody else putting up their photos, is this story of Monster Hunter is your personal journey, and when you got those pants, when you upgraded your greaves, when you know what I mean? And so I think eventually it might get to I'm not ready to quit Kinda Funny to go play Monster Hunter all the time, but it'll get to where Kevin and I do a match of PUBG, and it's like, man, I don't want to do another thing of that, but I know you want to go grind some whatever, but I'm this close to this thing, I want to do that. Like, there's going to be a day where I'm like, in my perfect world, Nick, I'm always like, I should just have it running on my PS4 here and just go get some mushrooms here and there and do like the little side questy shit. And just, we're too busy here even for that. But I feel like that'll be it, where it's like, we play for a while and it's like, all right, you want to go knock off some stuff or jump in, or here's this new content or these new costumes or something to go get.
I'm glad you guys like it.
Real quick, let me just give shout outs, because like, there's something I experienced in the game that I've seen as a GIF in Zelda, Breath of the Wild, where it was like, oh, look, you're just walking up to this thing, and there's two, like, giant monsters that are just fighting.
Yeah.
And, like, we've actually experienced that. Like, I never experienced that in Zelda. Like, I've never walked in and, like, seen a giant rock golem thing fighting some other monster. But with Monster Hunter, it's happened multiple times where it's just, like, we'll be in an area where a fucking giant dragon comes out and just swoops on him.
That's pretty
it's,
cool.
It's yeah, amazing. Turf Wars, it makes the world feel so real.
Yeah, and that's the thing is like the there's so much happening on the map, and there's Monster Hunter is such a big part of it. Is I mean, and similar to Breath of the Wild, but I mean, I think. No offense to Breath of the Wild, way greater scope and detail is crafting. And so it is like the, you know, what is it? I want to say exhibition. Expedition. I don't know why I can't remember.
You're just an exhibitionist.
Like the bar?
Like the car.
Oh, the Ford Exposition. Expedition.
Exposition.
When you go out on these fucking free missions, you can do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It literally is, they just drop you on the map and they're like, you're here for as long as you want. There is no time limit and you have like your side quest log of things to hunt or whatever, or gather. And so it could be that like, oh, and like the wish, they added in this one, the wish list function. So it's like, cool, I want to upgrade my swords to this, but I'm short of these things. I can add it to the wish list. And so when I'm running around expedition mode, I can see what quests I have available, things to kill, and then that as well. And so it can be, cool, I'm just gathering honey because I want to make more potions. Or I'm going to go out and hunt this very specific type of creature because I need more bones or skins or hide or whatever. It's great. Pretty Monster
cool.
Hunter's awesome.
Pretty cool. Let us know in the comments what you're thinking about.
Come on,
about
let
this
the hunt
there.
Be the hunted.
Monster Hunter. I want to talk about Shadow of the Colossus, the remake on the PlayStation 4. So you have not played it yet.
I've not.
Is How it come? Killing you?
No, actually, I'm like, I don't know. My emotions about it have been sort of up and down over time. I mean, largely, I'm just really excited that a lot more people get to play it, especially for the first time, Greg.
Yeah.
Not from total scratch. But it sounds like you hadn't played much
enough,
of it before.
Like, right, I don't think I have ever got past the second Colossus.
So I'm really excited for that. I think the PS3 remaster is incredible, and I think that's like the sort of best version of that the game could have been. So I felt sort of conflicted seeing it, and I was like, oh, it's like a pretty big change. I don't know if that's what the game needs, but if that's what it takes to get it in a lot more people's hands. And now that I've seen more and more, I've been just like watched a review this morning, I was like, okay, it does look really stunning.
Yep.
And yeah, now I'm just like super curious.
My review of the game simply is this is Stop. The definitive version. Oh, you're right.
Hey, friends at the FTC, PlayStation sent us this game for review. We didn't buy it ourselves. They sent it to us for review. No promises. It's not an ad thing. Don't worry. Kevin, we need that disclaimer up here, too. This is our, you know, fucking PlayStation. Couldn't you help us out before you left? We're in the influencer bucket instead of the press bucket now, so we got to say this stuff all the time.
Yes. So, yeah, they sent us the game. Shadow of the Colossus remake on PlayStation 4 is the definitive version of one of the best games of all time. I,
cool. That's great
from
to hear.
Beginning to end,
yeah.
was once again enthralled by such an amazing world, such a different experience for what video games have shown us. And man, it is so, so fantastic. Still has issues, still has a lot of the same issues that the other game had. I haven't beat Shadow Colossus since it first came out in 2005. Oh, wow. Cool. I bought the PS3 collection,
yeah.
but I beat Eco because I'd never, Ico, whatever you want to call it.
You can beat it in like a sitting.
But I'd never beat it before on PS2. So I beat that. And then I booted up Shadow and I was like, cool, it's Shadow. But I was like, I'm not going to replay this now. And even when they announced it at E3, I was kind of like, I don't know that I need to go back to the game. It's, you know, it's very special to me, but whatever. But just like with how everything's been working out, like early in the year, there wasn't any game I was looking forward to. Monster Hunter doesn't speak to me. I was like, I'm kind of itching. The more videos I saw, the more I was like, you know what? They got me because it is beautiful. Yeah. And I played it on PS4 Pro, and there's two modes in PS4 Pro that you can use. There's cinematic mode and I wrote it down. Performance mode. Mm-hmm. So performance is 60 frames per second, but it's at 30 or 60 frames per second. But it's at 30. Wait, sorry, what?
What,
performance 1080? Mode is 60 frames per second, but it's 1080.
Gotcha.
Right. But
or
cinematic
4K, right?
Yeah. Cinematic mode is 30 at 4K, which is really, it's 1440p, but like super sampled up to 4K.
You know what I mean?
So it's like, it's not like true 4K. It doesn't matter. Kidding. It's fucking beautiful.
So what did you play it on?
It is. So that's the thing is I jump between the two. Like I feel maybe like, I'd say I probably played half the game at performance, half the game at cinematic, and I was just trying to figure out the difference. At the end of the day, I definitely preferred the performance mode, the 60 frames per second.
Mm-hmm.
It made the monsters just feel, or the Colossi, feel so much more like real, and like seeing the fur and seeing the way they move, and the animations really added. I think that that's one of the things that this game did so right is they nailed the animations. Him jumping on aggro just looks so much better than it used to. And when you do the thing where you stand on the horse and you can like shoot bows and arrows, it looks real. It looks cool and it totally fits. And the biggest improvement to me is HDR. Mm-hmm. HDR on PS4 or PS4 Pro is stunning. And a lot of people have been asking me what game's the best to show off HDR. And I used to say Horizon. I used to say Ratchet and Clank. Those are both beautiful. This is the game.
Wow.
I mean, it's literally, it's in the name, Shadow, right? Like, this game uses shadows so well. And there's so much shadows and there's so much bright, almost like blown out. Like, it looks kind of like that right there, where it's just these, this blown out light. And seeing the difference, seeing light go through the
blades of grass.
Between, yeah, blades of grass and between the leaves and forests and stuff. And the whole, the lighting in the game is unbelievable. And the HDR, just looking at it, there's so many times I would stop and just be like,
I saw the photo mode looks pretty ridiculous too.
And from the photo mode with all the filters. And there's
also, I guess, a few filters you can actually play. You can use, like, turn on while you're playing.
Yep. So you can just switch between a bunch of filters, and it's not the type of filters that are kind of like groan worthy, where it's like, this just looks like some Instagram bullshit. Why would you want to fuck your game like that? They decided to go with a different look overall for the game, as I'm sure that you're aware just watching it.
Sure.
It's a little less warm. Than it used to be, but there was a warm filter that makes it look like it used to, and I appreciate that. So graphically, it is one of the most impressive looking games I've ever seen. Having said that, it's not perfect. A thing that really bothered me, and the reason that I was switching between the two modes, is the amount of pop-in is ridiculous. And I'm not seeing anyone in other reviews talking about this, but no matter what field you're in, It looks like the grass is constantly just growing in front of you. And I was in cinematic mode for a while, and I was like, oh, maybe it's just because it's 4K and it can't really handle it. Then I moved over to performance, and it was there as well. And I was like, it's kind of upsetting, because that's such a expected thing for me, where it's like, when you're trying to make everything looks so good, like it stood out a lot.
I mean, that is the original does have that, and the PS3 has that. So I wonder, you know, I don't know the process behind this one and sort of what Bluepoint started with from scratch versus like working on the existing code, but maybe that's something that was like not worth the trouble to, you know, revisit. I don't know.
From my understanding, it is total from the ground up their code. They made it. It's not from the original. It is them trying to remake exactly what that was. It's similar to the Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy that came out last year. Yeah. Where it is as faithful as possible to the original, but it's not actually from the original.
Sure.
And you can tell, and like it feels exactly like the other game did. There's modern controls, and then there's
the original controls.
The modern controls, not perfect. And that's the thing, is like, it's a weird struggle where I feel like I'm sounding negative about this game based on
the best thing.
And it is one of the best games of all time, and this is the definitive version for sure. However, the idea of modernized controls excited me, because while I never really had an issue playing in 2005 on a PlayStation 2, because that's how games were then, playing the idea of when I booted up on PS3, it felt outdated then, and it felt like, the amount of times you have to like hold the thing up, and just, you got kind of claw-like on the DualShock 2. And I was like, okay, cool, they're gonna modernize this. And the way that they did, it's definitely better, but it still doesn't fix a lot of the issues that I had. A lot of people complain about the camera. Camera never got in my way. Camera, I feel, is great for making the fights feel like a struggle. Like, and it's not like an excuse, that's part of it, right? But I couldn't help but compare the game to Breath of the Wild, playing it, having just played Breath of the Wild. And it, on one hand, it's such a compliment to Shadow of the Colossus, where I'm like, holy crap, in 2005, an experience like this existed. That on PlayStation 2, and seeing this game, it looks like you remember the PS2 game looking. That's always the best compliment you can give a remake. But I was shocked playing it, where Breath of the Wild is one of my favorite games of all time, blew me away. But when I was first playing, I was like, there's not been nothing like this ever. And now replaying this, I'm like, yes, there has. There actually has, especially when it comes to the climbing, you know, like just climbing the Colossus and all this, and that, and the stamina system and all that.
And it's interesting to see that comparison too, and to think about a lot of people, things that people praised for Breath of the Wild for are things that were like really Shadow of the Colossus influences, but it's easy not to think about it, because it is weird that Shadow went down the sort of one route in a lot of ways, which I talk about in my book, that not a lot of other games went down. It's sort of on this weird branch of gaming history that, like, Eco was super influential in like myriad ways you could easily obviously point point to with the companions and games. And but Shadow sort of exists over here that eventually came around and had some influences in things like Zelda. But otherwise was sort of this weird outlier for a long time. So it's great to see it like, yeah, have this status now. And I assume the modernized controls are sort of more accessible.
They're definitely more accessible. With the controls?
Yeah.
And
I know it's hard because...
It's hard because I'm trying to remember like how it all... They flipped the X and the triangle.
Triangle, right? Great. Okay.
Yeah, so that's good.
You jumped with triangle by default in the original.
Yeah, now you jump with X. R2 is to grip and climb, which I think that was original as well. Which was really fun jumping between this and Celeste because both are the same thing. That's grip. That's good for me. Yeah, I mean, there's not too many changes to it. And I think that
a big part of the controls, like for me, missing Shadow, I think it was the fact that when I got it on PS2, I don't think in buying it sight unseen, it was like, oh, EGM liked it. So, of course, mm-hmm. I'll pick it up or whatever. I think I expected something different or I didn't understand what I was getting into. Whereas, like, I know people said this Last Guardian, especially when I didn't like Last Guardian, but like, the struggle of climbing and making it difficult is a key component of the game, right?
I mean, that's why it's interesting to talk about some of the stuff of like the modernized controls and all that, because a lot of it, I think the design top to bottom is very intentional for better or worse. And they want Ueda-san wants his games to feel a specific way, I think. And they do things where they often prioritize animation over responsiveness. And I think, and I'm sort of a defender of the controls a lot. And I do talk about it in the book and stuff too, but I think a lot of people react adversely to it because it just doesn't feel like other games that they're used to. So to me, like, modernizing is making it feel like other stuff you play.
Yeah.
Which, again, if
but
that
it
makes
doesn't,
it,
though. And that's the thing is, like, these modern controls, they don't. Like, these modern controls
are
just
because it was never made to be that.
And it's, to me, the most interesting thing about the controls is it is easy to complain about it. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to be like, well, this doesn't feel like Breath of the Wild. Breath of the Wild controls better. If this game controlled like Breath of the Wild, there'd be no game. Like, that's like that. You can't have the controls.
When I've talked about that and admitted that it was an unfair thing by me, but it's just what turned me off to it at the time. I always say, though, I didn't want them to come back and make it perfect and make it the way I think it should play, because I feel like we'd get into Twin Snakes territory. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember because like when we added first person, it's like, oh, great. You broke the ninja fight.
Right.
Yeah. Right? Gray Fox shows up, you're like, bam, bam, bam.
And,
right,
and also right, the Vulcan Raven fight in the tank.
Yeah.
It's just like, boom, this is so easy where it was so difficult.
Yeah.
And yeah, it would be like that. And it's very different than Last Guardian. I liked Last Guardian a lot, but I would liken that more to Ico than to Shadow of the Colossus. And I feel like it was all the frustrating parts of Shadow of the Colossus with Trico and how he moved.
Sure.
And like I did have camera issues in that game. And you're right, struggling with controls, it was never fun. But that's because that was a struggle to get on the thing and get him to do what you wanted to do. Whereas the Colossus, it's a struggle because you're fighting them.
Yeah, exactly.
So like it's inherently different. And yeah, it's just it's funny because the modernized controls, it's just taking the controls the original game had and just fixing things that are obviously weird, like jumping with triangle. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, they're the same controls.
So which was your favorite? I got to know, what was your favorite Colossus?
So that's the thing. I can tell you my least favorite.
Okay.
It's the same as it used to be, which is the two and the small arena, the tiny ones, right? Mm-hmm. All the problems that existed before still do, where the smaller Colossi are way too hard to get onto and stay onto and to find their points. And if they knock you down, you're fucked. Because the moment they hit
you into a corner.
They bludgeon you in a corner, and the animation is so long for you getting up that by the time you get up, they can knock you down again. Mm-hmm. So you kind of, at that point, aren't fighting against the Colossus. You're fighting against the camera there and trying to, like, get into a place that he just can't hit you. So I didn't like those at all. But any of the flying ones are just... Sure, that's where this game, the spectacle of each of these fights, like, it is unlike anything I've experienced in a video game. And when you get on one of these Colossus and it's fucking taking off and flying, and you feel like, I can't fall off this thing, you know? And it's like, you start to relate to the character and the struggle becomes so real. Oh man, the bird-like one and then the sandworm is so awesome.
Yeah.
Another one of my least favorites would be the final one. Not too big a fan.
The
scope is great, but the final parts of where you're fighting it, that was like one of the only times I'm like, this is just frustrating to me. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not enjoying this, but I will say that the getting from Colossus to Colossus was my least favorite part of the game, where since I've done it before and I was like familiar with the world, it was just kind of a chore where I'm like just tapping the button to make aggro go faster. And like, I see I reach top speed. I'm like, I just want to go faster than this. Right. Like, just get me where I need to go.
For me, weirdly, obviously, I'm in like, I have a unique relationship to this game, but that's one of the things I'm most interested in is just exploring and seeing every little thing that's been changed. Because even like the little, like, you know, little shady glen of trees that I see in like some previews and stuff, like looks very different now. And just little different pieces of architecture look different. And I know they have added some stuff that I saw like some articles on about
Easter
like, Last Guardian Easter egg and stuff. So
you're going to love it. I'm so excited for you to play it. Because I don't know Shadow Colossus in that way.
I've been all the way down to the bottom of this rabbit hole, and it goes like so deep of like little fan theories and whatever. So I'm really curious to see which of those they sort of like either
expanded on or went through.
You know, and there's lots of leftover bits, obviously, from the infamously like cut Colossi right that people have discovered. So I'm curious if that stuff is that still in there. I'm really curious about that.
Yeah. No, I don't know any of that stuff. Yeah. But it's,
as the super fan. How does that start? Like, how did you get, and I know this isn't specifically about your review, but I mean, in the realm of Shadow, like, how do you get to writing a Shadow of the Colossus book? From a release, were you, like, all about this game?
Yeah, from release. So I was working at EB Games at the time, and I think I helped get, like, the most pre-orders in our district, because my manager, Greg, and I were just, like, such huge fans of it, and we loved Eco, and we just loved the game and were super excited for it. And like you, I think I saw them praising it in EGM or whatever, and actually, I remember the very first time reading about it, and I was like, it described it as the levels are, like, creatures you can climb, and I was like, what? That's incredible. So from moment one, I was excited about it, and then it really, as soon as I played it, I was like, okay, this is my favorite game ever. It's just one of my favorite things ever too, like just pieces of art, like singular influential things in my life, and it's always been number one by that great margin. And so I ended up being a Kickstarter backer of the Boss Fight book series, which has a bunch of great other books too. Splunky is the other one I'd strongly recommend. Which is written by the developer. Anyway, I was a Kickstarter backer, and there's always each season of books, there's a fan-voted book as well and I voted for Shadow of the Colossus. I was like, oh, I'd love to see a Shadow book. And then I saw on a backer update they were looking for writers for it, and I was like, this is the role I was born to play.
Yeah.
So I ended up talking with Gabe, who runs the series, and it all worked out. It was sort of weird doing it, like, because I was working for Sony at the time.
Yeah.
Like, as this is like a non-official book, this is like a fan thing separately that took some
doing. Were they okay with it?
But yeah, I mean, eventually they were very cool and supportive.
What is the book about? Because I know a lot of the boss fight books kind of aren't necessarily about the game. Some of them are more about people's experience with the game and things like that.
Sure. No, this really is sort of about the game. And I think it's, I approached it as sort of like a travelogue. So I think it's a fun like companion guide in a way to, I would encourage if anyone ends up reading it to like play a Colossus, then read the chapter about it. Because I divided it up so there is one chapter per Colossus.
Oh, dude, I need to get on this. That sounds
awesome.
Yeah, I'd
love to think about it.
Because it's one of those games where you don't really know what's going on.
Sure,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's definitely one of those things where as soon as I replayed it now, I was like, I'm going to go up on Wikipedia and kind of read some things because I'm like, I don't really know what's happening.
And that's the stuff I try to dig into, like why the different fights are interesting and then talk about different aspects of the game along the way when they sort of like rear their heads. The other part is just talking to a whole ton of developers who from like Neil Druckmann to Joseph Ayers and like everybody who was really influenced by the game. So there's a whole ton of chats and quotes with other developers as well, sort of threaded throughout that about different elements of it. Because again, it's like weirdly, like I said, Eco is like has its very obvious influences. Yeah. Shadow, I think, was very influential as well, but in like a different weird way.
Sure.
What's your favorite Colossus?
I feel like I need to play the new one now to like reevaluate, but just the third one on the top of the like pedestal and the on the island was just, I love that one. But now it's like I've played through the game so many times and like dissected it so much that it's like I love them each in different ways.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. Another way that they did enhance the controls that makes the game a lot better is when you're on aggro and you're going in tight corridors and like you're on like mountain cliffs and stuff. Mm-hmm. The auto control of just kind of you just like need to just keep
press
it
forward,
going, press forward, and it will do the curves for you and do all that. Much better than
that. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, because that was always there, but I'm imagining now they sort of smoothed out the geometry of the level so it can
much smoother, because
better.
Before there was a problem, I experienced this a lot in the PS2 one where, like, if the horse hit a little rock, it would come full stop.
Right.
And you'd have to awkwardly kind of like tank control it to turn around and then keep going. And it was. frustrating.
There's also some really interesting things, again, just talking about the stuff that, like, weird things people find in the game. Like, there's this one, like, giant eagle in the game that lives in this huge weird tree that's in a very specific place. And that is the only eagle in the game that you can, like, hold on to and, like, you won't fall off of it and you just keep flying with that eagle. So, like, is that eagle still in this version? I would like to think so, but I don't know. So there's weird things like that that I only know about because, again, I went down this rabbit hole that is it still there? I don't know.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Curious.
So, Greg, are you going to give this game another shot?
100%.
Yeah, okay.
If we got this, we got codes from this from Sony. Hey, FTC. Right at, I thought we were going to get it right before I went to Canada because we got an email like the Monday before and I left on Saturday. I was like, oh, fuck, this will be perfect. And like on Thursday, I emailed the ROM and I was just like, when are these coming? He's like, Monday. I'm like, fucking hell. And so, like, it happened. And then when I came back, Monster Hunter was happening. Yeah. I'm way more jazzed for Monster Hunter. And the same, but it's just because that's a different experience, right? Of like when Kevin can't play or when we wind down, jump into that. Or like, I'm going to take my PlayStation with me on this trip if the hotel internet sucks that. But then again, Celeste and then a million other games.
I really wonder how you're going to feel going back and forth between that and Monster Hunter just with the basic sort of high level concept of controls.
Hey man,
maybe being
I'm
going to
be Mr. Japanese gamer all of a sudden. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, the cool thing too is this game does not last long. And I think that's definitely to its benefit.
How long did it take you?
Fuck, I want to say 6 hours.
But I bet that's because you played it before.
Sure.
Like, that's pretty
quick. Because I knew where I was going.
I'd guess probably twice that for your first
Yeah.
I would think. Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. It's well, there we
finally,
go.
Finally, I was hoping it would come up during this.
Nice.
Jeez.
Thank you.
But yeah, no, it's I love that Colossus too, man. God.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah. But it's a beautiful game. It is such a great journey. I love how different it is from other video games. And like you were saying that, you know, Ico did influence a lot of things. And this one kind of weirdly didn't in a lot of ways until, I'd say recently, Breath of the Wild. But it's just, it's so weird how I feel like a lot of things that we talk about this game sound like bad things, but absolutely aren't. It's like, it's such an open world and there's no bad guys in it.
Like, well, think about pre Breath of the Wild too. It's like, what other sort of AAA games give you room to breathe like that and just sort of be alone in the middle of nowhere with nothing else to do very intentionally?
Yeah. And it's like, that's the beautiful thing about it is there's not just random little grunt enemies around. Like there are the 16 colossi, they're out there. Mm-hmm. And then it's just, it's you and some wildlife and that's it. And it just creates such a different experience going in. And then just the way that they handle, without spoiling anything, when you beat each one, things happen and it gets progressively more and more like, wait a minute, what's going on? And that's the drive to want to get to the next thing to figure out what is really going on is so interesting. And like just the way that it handles like, are you a good guy? Are you a bad guy?
Mm-hmm.
Do you even know? It's like, wow, this is a beautiful game.
Yeah, I was going to say that to Greg, too, is I'd say, and this is when I've talked to some people who sort of gave up midway through Last Guardian, I'm like, just finish it because where the story goes really validates so much of like what you've done so far. Mm-hmm. And I think just the ending is really interesting and the whole thing. And there's not much story, of course, but there's a few like key cutscenes, and I think it's really interesting, and especially some of those elements of like how you feel about killing them and how that changes over the course of the game is great. And then having a sense a little bit of how it may or may not tie into the other games too, which is of course its own
interesting question. And that's a whole other very cool thing. And it replaying this made me like Last Guardian even less than I did, but that's just because I love this game so much. And Bluepoint knocked it out of the park. I was reading a thread on Reset Era, a thread of people talking about what they want Bluepoint to do next, if it's just continue doing more remakes, or is it time to finally just let them make something new again. I think the last time they did was early PS3.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, just keep doing remakes. Like, they just do them so well. Like, looking at the Uncharted collection.
Yeah.
Like, they knocked that out of the park.
Metal Gear.
This type of, like, ground up. Yeah, come on. Let's go. Yeah. That'd be fantastic. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they did the collection. Oh, sorry. That's my record.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, they had done the Legacy Collection or whatever they called it.
Did they also do God of War and all those?
Yep.
Kind of makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, those are great.
Yeah.
But no, this is different. Like, this is somehow makes it look like a PS4 game. Like, it doesn't look like a remake of an old game. Like, if people didn't know it was a remake, playing this, they'd be like, oh shit, cool. This
and is I'm really curious how people are going to respond to it as like a new game for those people who don't really know its history. It's like if you walk in a store and you pick up this thing and it's like, oh, cool, giant creatures.
Yeah, right. You
know. $40 too, though. So it's like, that's the thing. It's like, it is a budget price. Yeah. And that's great, I think. It's more than worth it. If you're interested at all, I'd highly recommend picking it up. And again, let me know what you think about Shadow of the Colossus. Kev, are you going to play this one?
Yeah.
Good. I think you're going to like it.
I'm excited.
I think you're going to like it a lot.
I always wanted to play it.
Yeah.
And while you're there, go to boss5books.com and enter the code AGRO for 15% off of my book for, I don't know, a little while.
Yeah, shout out to my wife, Genevieve Saint-Ange Miller, whose book that is, because she's a huge Shadow fan. Nice. And she's like, oh, I picked that. I'm like, I know that guy. Yeah, buy that.
I didn't know that. That's awesome. Very cool. I saw it recently at Green Apple Books.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I bought it.
Oh, yeah?
I did a reading from it there a little while ago.
Wow.
For the Splunky book launch party, yeah. Man. It's fun. Yeah, seeing it in stores is like a total thrill.
Oh, that must be cool.
Yeah. Oh, Tim's drinking LaCroix.
Ah. You know, I want to talk about Celeste, Greg. But before
I knew something was going to happen here. Oh, you're going to do an ad read?
Yeah.
I'm going to get a beer. You want more water?
For it.
Please,
thank you. You want a beer? Now?
I know.
Can I get another one of these guys?
Sure.
Thank you. This episode's brought to you by Sherry's Berries. Sherry's Berries and Pro Flowers have teamed up to help you really impress your Valentine this year with the perfectly paired collection. Go ahead and think inside the box this Valentine's Day. I love that. That was good. That was real good. This really is a one-of-a-kind gift. Your dipped strawberries and flowers will arrive together in a beautiful, specially designed box that will keep your berries cold and your flowers fresh. Guaranteed. How you like them berries, Kev? Because I know you ate a lot of them berries.
I was just in Chicago. Let me tell you, my berries were very cold.
Yeah? You have them cold berries? I got this for Gia. She loves the flowers. A lot of beautiful roses. Our house is smelling real nice right now. Right now, you guys can save 20% on any one of the perfectly paired combinations or any other gift over $29 with the promo code KFGAMES. Hurry and order today. Valentine's Day is next week. There's only one way to get 20% off perfectly paired gift over $29, and that is to go to berries.com. That's berries.com today. And enter code KFGAMES at checkout. That's berries.com. Code KFGAMES. And the second sponsor is good old Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the leading meal kit delivery service in the U.S. And while many people know what we do, many people don't know about the types of meals you can eat when you cook with Blue Apron. Like strip steaks with potatoes and a spicy maple collard greens. That sounds like a Greg Miller special if I ever heard one. A steakhouse-inspired favorite with a delicious twist, chili-infused maple syrup. With incredible ingredients and chef-designed recipes, Blue Apron lets you see what the power of food can do. There's three different meal plans that you can do. The two-person meal plan that serves two people, obviously. You get to choose from eight new recipes per week with a choice to receive either two or three recipes any week. There's the family meal plan that serves four people. You get to choose four recipes per week with a choice to receive two, three, or four. And then finally, there's the wine plan, where you get six bottles of wine from renowned winemakers delivered monthly. Greg and Jen have been partaking in that, and they have been loving it. You get these cute little wine bottles. Taste them, a little taste test.
Just wine for dinner.
Why not, dude? Wine, not. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's not even sponsorship. They pay for it. They pay for their own Blue Apron wine. You liking it, Greg?
What?
The Blue Apron wine?
Yeah.
He does.
Can we get sponsored by Blue Apron Wine now?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the whole thing.
Oh, just Blue Apron
in general. Blue Apron is treating Kind of Funny Gamescast listeners to $30 off your first order if you visit blueapron.com/gamescast. So check out this week's menu and get your $30 off at blueapron.com/gamescast. Blue Apron.
A better way to cook. Now, Kevin just handed me his water glass when I was going to get my beer and did this. And I came back with more water for me. I was like, you did not.
Yeah.
You said, I love you. No. Cool Greg, bring Kevin a Pilsner.
No, it's fine.
Get baby his bottle, Cool Greg. Well, I went back there. Andy Cortez just laying on the couch. What are we paying this kid for?
I don't know, man. Gundams.
I know. He's on his phone. He's probably looking at a Gundam.
Yeah.
Honestly, he's been working on a Gundam shirt for fucking months.
Celeste, ladies and gentlemen.
Game of the year.
Game of the year. Game of the motherfucking year, man. If you're not playing Celeste, get off your ass. Get it. It is.
Great point.
$20?
Yeah.
Right? $20 on every system. Switch, PS4, Xbox One,
obtainable
PC,
platinum if you want
Mac,
to.
You're saying?
It'd be hard.
I mean, I play it on Mac.
You play it on Mac. It's available everywhere, and it is so damn fantastic. I put a tweet out saying that it's only been 30 days into the year, but if this is not my game of the year at the end of the year, I'm going to be shocked because I don't know what could possibly take this thing down.
Spider-Man.
There's a lot, but man, Celeste is a very special game, and you worked on it. What did you do on it?
I did. So I was the script editor and contributing writer or something like that. After I left Oculus a few months ago, I sort of went to explore the world of what other stuff I can do and do some more creative work and do some more writing. And I saw Matt Thorson, the creator of Celeste, and along with another a whole great team, and he did Towerfall as well, of course. He put out a blog post when the game was delayed till 2018.
Yeah.
What year is it?
What year is it?
Um, And he mentioned there that he was right in the game, but I forget exactly what he said, but I sort of got the impression that like he was a little unsure because it was the first game that he had really put that much story into. And so I reached out like, hey, is this something I could help out with? I'd love to get involved. And he was like, oh, I didn't even think about you, but that actually makes a lot of sense. So he sent me a build and I played through the first like chapter and then he sent me the script and I like gave him a bunch of feedback and tweaks and stuff and he was into it and we just went from there. So I ended up just doing sort of some, you know, just little editing, tuning, and tweaks, and changing this here and there, and writing a bit here and there, and just sort of help like fleshing out the story to help really tell the best version of what they wanted to tell. And I think the story is fantastic.
The story
before I showed up.
The writing is fantastic, and I think that like, that is something that makes it so special because it's a 2D platformer.
Yep.
In a world where grueling 2D platformers retro style is nothing fresh and interesting, this game is. This game to me is up there with the Shovel Knights. A lot of people keep comparing it to Super Meat Boy, and that's apt in how difficult it is and the kind of like
try again
like room progression system. But in my opinion, like this takes it to a different level because 100%. Of the story and the characters and my boy
and
Theo.
Just the context, I think, too, generally. And again, I feel like I worked, my role was small enough that I feel like I can join in the praise on this game and not feel weird about it. But
we did such a great job making this game.
But I think what's great, I think you care about like Madeline's journey. And I mean, I love Meat Boy as well, but it's like you care about this like brutal level design. You don't really care about like rescuing Bandage Girl. I mean, you do, but it's fun. But it's like, you know, in Celeste, it's like, oh, she's on this very personal journey to like climb this mountain just from this urge she has and meets other characters along the way who are really interesting and weird. And
like I was in, everything you're saying is correct. And the game excels at every part of it. The art is fantastic. The story is fantastic. The writing is fantastic.
The music
is insane.
You can check it out on Bandcamp.
Yeah.
It's the whole soundtrack's available.
You got to. It's awesome.
Also nominated for an IGF award for the music. Or
well
for the sound.
Deserved.
Yeah.
Well deserved. And yeah, the gameplay is so good, but I'm finding myself, you know, it started off of like, okay, cool. Yeah, I get the loop here. I love the room progression because it is, as somebody who's not great at platformers, and obviously they're putting new mechanics in there, I found myself going for the strawberries, which are like the, you don't need to get, but are like, hey, feather in your cap if you do. Because you respawn so quickly that the checkpoints are, like, it's every room. So it's like, I jump to a new room and it's like, oh, well, I'll spend 10 minutes trying to get a strawberry. What the hell? Yeah. And then at the end, I noticed, like, in the hotel levels, last level I beat, I'm playing it only, like, on the go. It was very much like, I was not getting frustrated because I was getting my ass handed to me by the end boss or whatever. But it was like, God, I just want to fucking beat this. Not to say I beat it, but because I want to know the end of his story. How are they going to wrap this up for him? What does it mean for her?
Yeah.
What's going to happen to the phone?
And you haven't even gotten to like that. You know, it gets
so good. So how far are you now?
I'm just into
that's at the end of the third.
Yeah.
Third chapter. Okay. And you've obviously beat the game.
Yeah, so when I was working on it, I like played through it, but at the time the B-sides and stuff were still coming together, so purposefully where there like wasn't a story, I was like, I'm not gonna play that, I'm gonna wait until to give myself stuff to play at the end. So now as I'm going through, I'm getting every strawberry, and I'm as soon as I unlock a B-side, I'm going and playing through that, which I don't know if you've tried them at all.
I have
yet.
My B-side, I've picked up my first B-side, but I haven't played it yet.
Okay, yeah, it's interesting because they're you know, it's essentially a brand new level in the same sort of world of that other level. But they're pretty brutal, and we were talking about it a bit earlier. It turns into more of like a puzzle game where it's like, all right, I need to actually really think about how to figure out this screen, just like the regular game, but only sort of exponential. And you'll be trying some route for like 100 deaths, and you're like, oh, wait a minute, I should just be doing this, and then solve it in like 5.
Boom. Yeah.
And then because you advance to the next screen a second later, like you're saying, it's like you respawn quickly. Yeah. Then it's like, all right, now there's a whole new brand new challenge that I immediately don't feel exhausted by the last one. I can just hop straight into this one.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is like you're dying over and over again, but it's, I don't feel like, I'm like, okay, that didn't work, but I know what I'm supposed to do. Can I do it? Okay, I did that. And then it would be the thing of solving that first little part and then, oh, died there because I didn't even think what was on that other side of the wall. Mm-hmm. All right, now I got to figure it. And like, yeah, just, I want to keep playing the game.
There's so much I have to say about this game that I feel sounds hyperbolic because it's just, it's too good to me. Like I love, not only is the story good, and you know, we've seen a lot of games in recent years, especially on the indie side, try to deal with depression and anxiety and like, character growth, you know, like personal growth. And I feel like this game does it very well without being heavy-handed and without being kind of like cringeworthy. And in addition to that, makes the gameplay relate to the story that it has. Like, it makes the moment-to-moment gameplay of a 2D platformer feel like it is right there, hand in hand, meaningful with the story and with the characters and with what's going on. And it's kind of like Shadow of the Colossus, where like you have these moments of like, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. You know, like what's going on? And I love that. And I feel like when we talk about a lot of games, the easiest thing to do is compare it to other games. Like, oh, it's like this mixed with this mixed with this. And this is one of those games where all of the games that I compare it to, it's like, oh, well, it's like the level design of Yoshi's Island mixed with the finding secrets of Donkey Kong Country 2, mixed with the difficulty of Super Meat Boy, mixed with the feeling of the jump being just right of any Super Mario Brothers game, mixed with the soundtrack of Shovel Knight. It's like an all-star list of the best parts of all these amazing games, and it works from top to bottom. It works. And I think the greatest compliment I can give it is I think this is the first game to totally nail difficulty and giving options to tone the difficulty down without insulting the player. The assist mode is amazing. If the game's too hard for you, there's just the level of granularity is ridiculous of what you can do to make it easier for yourself. And it doesn't slap you on the wrist. It's not like Super Mario where you get the little whatever the fuck it is.
I forgot what it was. But
every game has different things, but like you're invincible forever or whatever. And the game kind of makes fun of you for doing it. It's not like a baby mode.
You gave me a special hat in Super Mario, didn't it? What was that? I know you're talking about. Yeah.
But it's different, and it's like it feels like it's like, hey man, everyone's different. Like, that's kind of the point of the game.
I mean,
everyone has their own thing to do.
When you click on assist mode, right, to even find out what it is, there's just a heartfelt message from the developer who's just like, hey, or the team, I should say, but hey, the challenge of Celeste is critical to the story of Celeste. Like, we want you to struggle here, but we understand that's not for everybody, so we've included this. We'd urge you to only do this on your second playthrough, but if you want to use this now, by all means, we want this game to be accessible.
And last night I was telling my girlfriend she should play, because I really do think she'd enjoy the story and the adventure of it. And she wouldn't be able to get through it. I mean, she plays games, but not like Twitch stuff.
Sure.
So I told her, like, yeah, just use the assist mode. You can tone it down. You can turn yourself invincible or slow down time or whatever.
Yeah, it's just fantastic. And I love that it never overstays its welcome. And I feel like the progression and the pacing of it is so fun. The respawns being as quick as they are, you never hit that point where you're just against a wall. You're like, fuck this. And because you're always on to the next thing. It's like, okay, cool. And there is that sense of progression. And I just love the every level has its own kind of gimmick that makes it feel like a different game, like I just mentioned earlier. Like, there's certain moments I'm like, this is straight out of Yoshi's Island. This is some moments I'm like, Donkey Kong. Like, going through that, and to get the B-side levels, which you were saying, which is a whole other game. It's very much like Zelda with the second quest, you know, like going back and getting like this more difficult version of what you have. And I love that since each world introduces a gimmick, even on the B-sides, there's those gimmicks as well, being really put to the test.
And there's stuff you learn on the B-sides pretty early on. The basic controls, like, there's some pretty advanced techniques you can do right off the bat if you know what you're doing, but you won't really know, like, chances are, until you play the B-side and then you're forced to use them, and you're like, oh, now I can go back to the main game and do these crazy super jumps that I didn't even know about.
Yeah, and what's really cool about it is to unlock the B-sides, there's rooms you find that, in addition to just the strawberries being all over and those being kind of the challenges, there's other challenge rooms that are inspired by Super Mario Galaxy 2 with the music-based levels where to the beat of the music, different platforms will come up and you have to go. When you get through that, you unlock the B-side. And I love that that's music-based because the B-side is a music reference. You get the cassette. Mm-hmm. And then each of the B-sides has music contributed by like iconic, awesome video game remix creators and people that are just known in the world of video game music. And each level has its own kind of just remix theme song and vibe to it that is totally music-based that nothing to do with Celeste, the main game. And I'm like, it's the game that keeps on giving. Mm-hmm. It's like no matter what aspect you look at it, it's just the polish just through the roof.
There's also another layer too, which I don't know how much you know about that, of like beyond the B-sides. There's more, you know, like which I haven't tried any of that stuff yet, but
there's so much there. And I love that, like I was saying, each world has its own gimmick, doesn't outstay its welcome. And as you keep going, I feel that the story elements are perfectly paced and they never get in the way. If you think about it, it's like story in a 2D platformer. It's like, oh, there must be a lot of cutscenes or a lot of text. And there's only one section in the game that has a lot of text, mm-hmm. and it's meaningful. It's awesome. And it makes the rest of the game that much better. Mm-hmm. I am utterly in love with this game. The end of it is so powerful, so great. And I could not recommend it higher.
Awesome. And yeah, I can't wait to get play more on the plane tomorrow.
And for what I'll say too, with my experience with it, I will say one of the best things I can say about the game is that it is like absolutely a total reflection of the team in like this amazing way. Like it's such a warm, collaborative, awesome team of folks who all have like come from different backgrounds and have different experience. And I think you really feel that in the game. It just feels like this very like warm thing made, like this little gift of like, here, enjoy this thing that we have like a lot of heart in.
And that is going to destroy you, but yeah, you're going to love yourself for it.
But yeah, it was awesome to like even see a little tiny taste of that for me. But yeah. That's right.
So you earlier before the show in the pre-show you were talking about you were playing it with different controllers and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
What's your experience with that?
Well, I was playing it with a DualShock 4 on my Mac while I was working on it, and now I'm playing through it again on Switch. I still feel like I prefer playing it on a DualShock 4, but like having it on Switch is nice on the go too. So
analog or the
I went back and forth. I think I like tend to default to analog, but it was when I need to like be sure of something, have like some reliable direction, then I'll
and that's something for me as a
which is tough on Switch because there's not much of a D-pad.
Exactly, and the analog is also not great for this type of stuff. The controls are so key, and it's like you can't fuck them up. Like you need to know exactly what you're doing, and I think this game does a great job of you look at the room. And it starts as a puzzle, and then it just turns into the mechanics of getting from point A to B. So once you figure out what you need to do, then it just becomes about doing it.
Yeah.
And the doing it part can be very hard if the controls aren't perfect.
Yeah.
And I could never imagine playing a 2D platformer with an analog stick. Like, that's blasphemy. This game kind of requires that. And I switched back and forth depending on what I was doing. But when I played the last half of the game using the GameCube controller. With connected to the Switch with the
because that kid said that
because the kid said it because the analog has the octagonal just kind of like
sure. That's things
and oh it made it so much better.
That's cool. It's based on like an 8-way dash, so
that was really great. But
I'm sure a pro controller is also
and I played play half Switch. The time in handheld mode and half the time with the pro controller on the TV, and it's just like, I mean, no matter how you play this game, it's great. But there was many deaths I had where I'm like, thank you. I should not have died, and it was just a stupid.
Yeah, it happened to me all the time. When I was playing initially, I was on the plane playing it with the Joy-Cons just in handheld mode, and I was like, wow, this is great. But even the rumble it was giving me, I was like, that's too much. And so on the flight back, I busted out the pro controller, was sitting there at the airplane on the little thing going with that one.
Next game. The Inpatient.
The Inpatient. Supermassive PlayStation VR. Heads up, FTC. Kevin put a note here. You're going to have to put it again. PlayStation sent us this game for review. We didn't buy it, but we aren't paid by them. Because let me tell you, what a fucking disappointment.
No.
Yeah, Kevin kept walking in the room when I was playing it. Because it was when you guys went to LA for Funhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gotten it, and I was like, oh, perfect. The afternoon off from like being on camera, I have the VR set up. I'm super stoked for this game. Put it on, went in, and it was just like, it's like the for VR in particular, it's that critical moment when you know it's off rails of I'm in another world. Whoa! And I'm like, where have any good emails have come in? Like, you know what I mean? I'm waiting on a response because it's just like it's not scary. It's boring. You move too slowly. I mean, like, fidelity-wise, it's fine. It's not like it's bad there. And
this is like the sort of spinoff of Until Dawn, right?
It's the prequel. You're in the sanatorium that they, is in Until Dawn. I think it's the 60s versus, present day Until Dawn. They do something at the end to try to tie it together. But it's just like...
How long is the experience?
I've seen a lot of people online say an hour and a half. I want to say it was 2 hours, a little bit more for me, but I think I did do eventually. Kevin,
you were checking emails.
Kevin came in and I did pop it off, and I'm like, I'm bored as shit. And I did check emails and did do stuff. I think I came in here and filmed some bump for something. So it wasn't like I was just going straight through it, but it was a slog. Eventually, you turn a corner where it's like, oh, okay, it's moving a bit more. There are like, on top of it being an easy platinum, I will play it again because there are butterfly moments. There's like 6 of them though. It's not like Until Dawn where it like really got crazy, but there are things of like you get to the end. It's a game that, thanks. Andy heard the call that.
Tim Thank you. I appreciate.
Just a taste of what's to come.
I do appreciate.
Good man. Thanks, Andy.
What is the gameplay? Because I actually don't know much about the game besides like the teasers that I've seen.
I mean, yeah,
is it like Until Dawn? Like
no, God. Well,
I mean, is it the third?
No. It's first person.
It's sort of action adventure.
You're a patient in the sanatorium, and you're trying to figure out what's going on. And so, the first part is you in your fucking room a long time with your roommate talking to her. Well, it was a her for me, and I don't know if that changes. I chose in the beginning to be a female. But then it's like, you know, you pick up stuff and you flip it around, and then it takes you back to a memory. Because, like, it starts with you getting, like, electroshock and, like, trying to remember things and figure it all out. But then, like, things go off the rails. You know what I mean? And, like, at some point, I'm spoiling Impatient. Like, there's a lockdown, and you guys can't get out for a few days, and all these different things happen. And then finally the door opens, but, like, you get separated from your roommate. And it's, you finally introduce some new characters, and things start happening. And they start trying to finally weave this story of, like, who are you, and why are you here, and what the fuck's happening? And this isn't a spoiler. Well, I don't want to spoil cast this. It wasn't great, but it did leave me enough questions that I do want to play it again, just to get, especially now that I know that it's super short and I know where to go and, like, skip a little bit faster. But I'm very pro PlayStation VR, right? I'm doing a PlayStation VR show, patreon.com/kindoffunnygames this month. And it's because stuff like Moss and stuff like Blood and Truth, where I've seen it and played it and been like, this is awesome. I had played the Impatient demo at the same time, and it was, all right, I'm in the room. There's one jump scare. Okay, this will be interesting. I like Supermassive. It just doesn't come together. It's just a slog of playing through. There's a few jump scares. There's not that bad. I think they don't use enough things from Until Dawn that made Until Dawn interesting, where there is a moment of, like, just one moment, I think, maybe two, of, like, stand still. Remember how you get Until Dawn the first time that pops up, where you're like, oh, fuck, don't move the controller. That's fucking crazy. This one pops up, don't move the headset. You're like, oh, okay. And then it's like, it's over. And it's just like, all right, cool. And then on to the next thing.
That's so sad because, yeah. I mean, obviously, Until Dawn's great. That in VR sounds amazing. And my favorite PSVR game is Until Dawn. Rush of Blood.
Yeah.
And this seemed like, when we saw the trailer at E3, I want to say.
Yeah.
I was like, holy crap. There was a trailer. This sounds fantastic.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, figure two.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
But still, but I mean, I loved.
It was super massive. Like that, it was VR.
And like that had enough scares that I'm like, cool.
And you figure for, you know, the other side of the screen, for our expectations, it was in 2017, fucking Resident Evil 7 on VR. Holy
I think, like, the horror VR bar is pretty high.
And that was the thing. That was so amazing. When we filmed the PlayStation VR show, right, we tried to do an episode on Paranormal Activity. And we ended up stopping in the middle. Like, this isn't good. Scrap it. You know what I mean? Of, like, we wanted it to be fresh and jump scary. And we just didn't enjoy it at all. But my thought process when we scrapped it was like, well, the Impatient's coming up. I'll be able to drop Tim into a cool moment and go from that. And it's just like, Kevin watched off screen and it was just a lot of picking stuff up and looking around. And it's just like, this isn't what this game should have been.
Does it feel like something that was made for VR?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, not in a good way necessarily, sure, right? Sure, yeah. Because you move so slowly. Mm. Like, even walking around your room, like, when you first got it and you put it on, like, there's a whole scene of, like, calibration pretty much, where the guy's like, all right, now get out of your bed and walk to me, and you walk over to him and you move so slow. I was like, makes sense. I'm out of a wheelchair. I'm using
my leg. And I'm sure that's all comfort issue stuff, but it doesn't mean it's the best solution.
Exactly. And so, like, when they do open it up and you're, like, walking around the outside down hallways, you're just like, all right, I'm clearly going there.
A game like that, I imagine. It sounds like you're in a room or in a cell or something where it's like you want to have sort of probably free teleportation, but then it's like you can't teleport out of your cell, so how do you handle it? And maybe something's just don't quite work thematically, which then taints the movement, it sounds like.
You know, I thought Until Dawn looked so good. You don't remember how well faces looked.
In the main menu, you're like, whoa.
Yeah, granted, it's VR. You're going to have the screen door effect, yada, yada. I wasn't playing on a Pro. I'm playing on my retail unit here. Like, there's a distinct moment that's meant to be like the don't move moment and all this shit's happening. And when the scary thing shows up, I'm just like, that looks terrible. Mm-hmm. Like, this just doesn't look good. And like, if it wasn't easy platinum, I would just read the Wikipedia. But like, at some point I'm going to have an hour and a half to myself and just be like, well, let's go make the other choices and see where it all plays out. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I can't. And it sucked to be playing it and Kevin come in and like, how is it? I'm like, it's not, I'm bored right now, but I'm hoping. And he kept checking in every 15 minutes. I'm like, it's still still not there.
So I guess, I mean, I'm curious if from that spectrum of like Until Dawn to Rush of Blood to Impatient, like that's pretty sort of connected games are very different. Like what would you want to see from Supermassive as like a next thing? Like,
well, I'd want to see them do Until Dawn 2 or an Until Dawn game like that, right? Like they're doing Bravo Team as well. And it's like, okay, this scares me for Bravo Team. Because I feel like they missed the mark so much here. Mm. Like, I don't even think they're...
I imagine that's a different team, though, too.
Of course. I'm painting with a very broad brush here. But it's just the fact of, okay, like, I thought this was a slam dunk. You know, I think since Until Dawn and since and with Rush of Blood, it's been like,
I don't know if everyone loved Rush of Blood, but
well, sure, but I mean, for what it was. Yeah. I mean, like, right, of like, hey, here's this shooting gallery on my only complaint ever with Rush of Blood was just like, why did they attach Until Dawn to this? Like, that was a weird thing. Why are you trying to make this Until Dawn?
I guess to me, the reason I loved it so much is, you know, with VR, shooting galleries work. And it's fun. The idea of shooting guns and being able to move and see the like see your hands and all shit, like that is a function that really works.
Yeah.
On rails on a roller coaster type thing, that works.
Yeah.
And when you take that and add jump scares and shit, scary games in VR, that works. So to me, I'm like, that game works more than most things I've experienced on it.
Totally.
And it wasn't just experience. There's a game there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. You're not wrong at all. Like, I think you're right. And that's the thing here is that this is a game caught somewhere between a game and an experience. And, like, there's ideas here, but they just didn't execute on anything.
Yeah. That sucks. Next game I want to talk about, Guacamelee 2.
Oh, yeah.
You motherfucker.
Yeah. It's more just being a jerk and teasing
you
it.
You motherfucker. But, how are my Drinkbox boys doing?
And they're doing well. Yeah, they're making a great game. Yeah, so I've been doing some like consulting type stuff in my new weird freelance adventure. And one of those things was recently to work with those guys to sort of do a full play test and play the game and give them a bunch of feedback, which was a couple weeks ago. And I basically got the okay from them to say like, yeah, I played it. It's coming along great.
I was going to say, really I wonder cool. if you, yeah, 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 yeah. Your play test is like, this is shit. Like, I'll talk about it on any podcast you want.
It's great to go back to that world after like 4 or 5 years or whatever it's been. Yeah. Just immediately really charming and funny and looks like beautiful. I mean, they had like a great art direction before, art style, but now like it's amazing lighting and there's just lots of little touches that are really nice and it's coming along great. I wasn't quite sure what to expect because it was a nice surprise when they announced it like the PSX, you know, pre-show or whatever. But yeah, it's coming along well. Because you asked me like, we're talking about what we're playing and I was like, what have I been playing? Oh yeah, that one thing I can't talk about, but at least I wanted to
say
that.
You have something to say.
Got something.
And then Blossom Tales, Greg.
Oh right, yeah, Blossom Tales. This is the
one. I don't know what that is.
Here, I'll show you.
It's a Link to the Past style.
It's a knockoff of Link to the Past. Game. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Maybe I saw that in the store.
No. It's fun. It's good.
When I was trying to find video games on the Switch store, which is
challenge. If only there were a few on there. If only what I mean that you weren't like constantly barraged by it. But no, it's totally a link between or a Link to the Past. I always jumped a Link Between Worlds. Zelda game where you're going through, you know, top down like that, except this time you play as
even the menu font. Totally.
It's a brilliant game. Like right now, as I restart it for you, it is very much Princess Bride, where a grandfather's telling a story to the kids, and so it's littered with, you know, jokes and all stuff. When you restart the game and you pick back up, he does a little recap of where you left off in the story.
That's art direction.
When you start the game, it is very much like he's like, have I told you the story about this guy who's lost in time and his name is Link? And they cut him off like, yeah, you say that all the time. Nice. So he tells you this new story this new story.
That's
where
funny.
You're the I think princess or the king's daughter or whatever. And you want to join the knights and you've finally been accepted into the knights. And then all hell breaks loose and you have to go through and you're playing through, fighting monsters, doing dungeons. Like
that's some quality pot smashing. So that's
exactly
that's
lots
important.
Of pot smashing.
I wasn't sold on this because I was like, yeah, I don't really need it. Seeing this right now in action in the dungeon, I'm like, oh, wow, this really...
Hold on. Kev's going to show you how Sky Cam in a second here.
There we go.
You have 51 friend requests, by the way, Greg.
Yeah, I know. No, you're fine. No, he's got Sky Cam. He's got Sky Cam for you. Yeah. Another reason, if you audio listeners should pull your car over. No, I would have... What had happened is... I guess, this is what I was wrong about with Celeste, is that I had played this on the flight to Canada, and had a great time and loved it. And then when I landed there, my Celeste code came in. Started playing it at the Airbnb, and I was like, oh, fuck, I love this game. And then jumped in. So Celeste is what derailed me here. But this game, also awesome. I had asked you guys last Gamescast that I was on what I should play, and you had shouted this game out, bought it. I love it. I want to play more of it. Okay. Yeah. But it kind of falls into, here's the one downside to it.
Oh, this looks cool.
It falls into...
it's very stressful doing this live.
What's the knockoff Zelda that I was always talking about?
Oceanhorn.
It's a very Oceanhorn game, right? Of like, cool. When I left Oceanhorn, I wasn't really compelled to go back. When I left this one, now granted, I'm playing Celeste and there's a million other Switch games I have on there right now. It is very much like, I loved this. This was a great experience. It killed the flight. That was perfect. And I really liked it. But I'm not like, I need to go back and play it, right? Because it's more Zelda, and that's great. And if that's exactly what you want, fantastic.
Yeah, seems borderline litigious, but very cool.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's like 3D dot Game Heroes or Oceanhorn. Yeah, but yeah, I like it a lot. I thought it was great.
Cool. Thank you.
No problem.
And then Iconoclasts.
I just backed you up like six screens, by the way.
That's fine. This is very much going to be one of those games I start, and I'm like, where did I leave off?
Have you nice. Look at that Night in the Woods. Just came out today.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. I'm on it, man. Come on. Another game that I abandoned too early on PlayStation 4.
Oh, really? Oh, it's so good.
A game everyone's like, Greg, Night in the Woods is your jam. You need to play this game. And I started on PlayStation 4, and I was like, this is great. And then the next day, whatever came, and I had to go play that. Iconoclast, have you played this at all?
No, I'm curious about it, though.
I mean, this is a shitty thing of where I played the first two or three levels or something like that. Or I put maybe 30 an hour into it before I left. It was so good that I want to come back to it now. Yeah. I'm back. Yeah.
Like, it looks really, really cool.
PlayStation 4. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And it was that thing where
it's on Vita too.
I know. Yeah. It's on Vita. And it was the day or 2 days before I guess I left where I was like, no, I'm just bringing the Switch. I want to commit to finally playing some of these games. I bought so much stuff right before I left for the trip.
I had a weird existential moment before I went on my own trip like a week ago where I was like, oh, Iconoclast came out on Vita. Should I bring my Vita on the plane to play? Which is where I used to play a lot of Vita stuff. And I worked at Sony and I love Vita and spent a lot of time with it. But I was like, now I got the Switch. Oh man, this is a weird moment. Yeah, but then I went with my Switch.
I have this Waterfield Way bag. It's not an ad. But it's the same bag I had for my Vita, but big enough for the Switch, and I can fit both in there.
Nice.
So for a while I was dual wielding and I was like, this time I have to. I bought so much stuff. There's so much shit on Switch I haven't played. I needed to commit to it. Iconoclast, first blush, really cool. Really like it. Beautiful art style. I like the gameplay of it. You know, 2D scroll and shooting stuff. It's great.
Have you played Owlboy?
No, I'm waiting for that here.
Okay, yeah, I'm waiting for it.
From everything else as well.
Isn't that in like days?
Yeah.
Wait.
No,
they like, pushed it. Right?
Like,
it
was like 2 weeks.
Like,
right.
I thought it was supposed to be like January 25th, and now it's
I'm excited to play that because they, you know,
did you play it on PC at all?
No, I haven't played either.
Oh, okay.
I think Owlboy I was maybe a little more interested in. I think that I like the art a little bit more, but I'm curious about both. But
Owlboy came through our GDC stream right after we left and started kind of funny, and we were all like, "That's amazing!" But then it was sort of like, "Well,
both games have been around for
exactly." I know
we're just
great reviews on Steam, and the Hollow Knight's coming too. Very excited for that.
Yeah,
I think that's there's still no date for that, as far as I understand.
Right.
But God, so much cool shit.
Yeah.
And then the last game to talk about, Mom Hid My Game.
Yeah.
You guys both played this.
Oh yeah.
What is this?
Nick, explain it.
I would say I'm a long time fan of the franchise.
Yeah.
which started with Hidden My Game by Mom I don't know if it's just on iOS, but it's definitely on iOS. And Hidden My Game by Mom too. And then My Brother Ate My Pudding is sort of the spiritual successor there.
Have you heard of any of these games?
Fucking with me?
No.
And actually, the developer Hap Inc. I think has made like a whole bunch more games. But
play a level. Just play a level.
Can we just get that jam up on the?
Yeah, put that. Yeah,
gotta hear that. That's. I wish they had actually left the original title intact.
Oh yeah, totally.
Now
totally.
Mom Hid My Game. It's like, I guess that sentence that makes sense.
Yeah.
But
well, that was another thing where Jen, when I was playing this on the plane, leaned over. She's like, oh, that's funny. They fix stuff? What are you talking about? I've never heard of this before.
It's just super charming, really funny, like it's just like great comedy through game design.
Yeah.
And you actually called it a hidden object game, which I hadn't even really thought of. It sort of is where it's like.
So the idea is that your mom, you play too many video games, so your mom steals what basically looks like a 3DS. Mm-hmm. It might even be a 3DS for this Nintendo version.
I think it looks more like a 3DS now.
Yeah, exactly. And so she takes it and hides it around the house. So every level is you opening cupboards or moving drapes and trying to find it, but it gets progressively crazier and crazier and crazier to where crowds of people are walking through your house and you have to figure out how to stop them. Your mom's over there with a lampshade on her head in case you accidentally tap her, but sometimes you'll think it's going to be her and it's not. That's what you need to tap the solution for.
There's lots of really funny, weird, subversive like comedy moments.
Yeah.
And there's also some like weird, I don't want to spoil any puzzles, but do you play the originals or just this one?
No, just this one.
You should play the sequel too. I don't know if it's going to come to Switch, but so the first one actually was like 30 levels, and this is the same thing, only they added like 20 more or so. And there's also a couple key levels where they have sort of meta puzzles that I don't want to ruin, but are like brilliant. When you do it, you're like, oh, that's amazing.
Oh, sure.
And then actually, I don't know if you finished this one.
I haven't finished it
yet. But now I haven't finished this one either. I've been trying to take it slow on purpose. But the endings actually of both games are like really poignant and sweet. And I was like, oh man, in this very silly game, they managed to have this really like sweet commentary on like playing too many video games. And it's just like a wonderful ending. It's really charming. I love that. I love that that dev.
I was going to say, I do not like the controls at all. Then I realized touchscreen.
Yeah,
the touchscreen. Yep. That makes that shit choice.
It's funny because it's amazing that like there's a version of this now on Switch, and it's like, you know, barely like not a mobile game, but it is. It works and it's great. And like I said, it's like 50 levels now. There's a whole bunch of new stuff. So even if you played the original on iOS, which you probably didn't, let's be honest, it's a great game. It's hilarious. Like, it's a wonderful thing. If I hadn't played the original, like, I would be recommending this even more strongly. Like, this would have been like a total shock out of nowhere.
Oh, but yeah, that's what it was for me. Yeah, where I started, I'm like, I don't like people. You guys had recommended it, the Gamescast audience. And I looked into it. I was like, "All right, like I like hidden object games. Mm-hmm. How is it going to be interesting?" Mm-hmm. And then when it is like, "Oh, this is just a comedy," where it is like you start doing stuff you think it would do or whatever, and like that's totally wrong.
I just opened a closet and an alligator came out. So
yeah, that's a lot of the game. I'm trying to pull up my phone so I can look at the other. There's another recent release by that same developer that's a little bit creepy but still fun.
Mom hit my body.
Toki Meter.
What's Toki Meter?
It's you're like sort of trying to impress a girl that you're chasing after and just doing different things and like catching flowers for her and stuff. And it's got a Toki Meki Meter, which I don't know what that means, but a little weirder, a little creepier, but still fun,
some cool,
fun sense of humor. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Nick, thank you very much for joining us. Where can people get the book?
Bossfightbooks.com. You can also, and actually, that's where you get like the physical book. You can also get the ebook, maybe the physical book on Amazon, and a couple scant bookstores across like the Strand in New York and what's called Powell's in Portland, like some of the big famous bookstores. Bossfightbooks.com. Agro is the 15% off code we got going right now in celebration of the remake. Thanks for having me.
Now, Tim, before you let us go, I, of course, again, need to remind the FTC that PlayStation sent us those games. They didn't pay us to tell us about you. We got to tell you that they sent them to us. Because I'm sure you thought we somehow murdered a man and got Shadow Colossus early, but no, in fact, they sent it to us. But they didn't pay us to talk about it. That's why I can say the impatient, not worth your time or money. Sorry.
Until next time. I love you.
I didn't get anybody. I'm just saying what it is. You know, call them like cool. I see them. Play Monster Hunter, everybody. Come find Kevin and I.
And play Celeste. Seriously.
Too many games
too
already.
Too many games. And Shadow of the Colossus. God.
And buy the book.
Do it all, man.
And follow Nick on Twitter.
Buy the soundtrack to Celeste.
Grow a beard.
Do it all. Oh, my God.